What do you do when you can see things others can't? When the spiritual realm appears more vivid than the coffee cup in your hand, yet you're also trained in rigorous philosophy and science? Rudolf Steiner lived this paradox daily. Born in 1861 in a railway station where his father worked as a telegraph operator, young Rudolf existed at a peculiar crossroads between the natural world and the mechanical future, between visible reality and invisible realms. At age 5, while sitting in a waiting room, a ghostly woman appeared to him asking for help, then vanished into a stove. Hours later, he learned a relative had committed suicide at that exact moment. Most children would be traumatized. Steiner simply accepted it as confirmation that two worlds coexisted, equally real. This acceptance would shape everything. Waldorf schools educating millions today, biodynamic farms pioneering sustainable agriculture, and a comprehensive spiritual science that refuses to choose between reason and revelation. Steiner struggled academically until age 10, couldn't spell, couldn't write grammatically. Then an assistant teacher handed him a geometry book, and everything changed. Suddenly, triangles and the Pythagorean theorem weren't just mathematical abstractions, but doorways to another dimension. What electrified him wasn't solving problems, but recognizing that forms, which are seen purely inwardly, independent of the outer senses, could be as real as physical objects. If unseen geometric truths existed objectively, why not unseen spiritual realities? This insight became Steiner's foundation. While other teenagers worried about grades, he taught himself advanced calculus, mastered bookbinding, learned stenography, and devoured Kant's Critique of Pure Reason at 15. Kant's conclusion that we can never truly know reality, only our mind's interpretation, infuriated him. Steiner's spiritual experiences told him otherwise. He could perceive the thing in itself that Kant declared forever hidden. His mission crystallized: prove that consciousness participates directly in reality's creation. Vienna's intellectual cafe culture became Steiner's university. At the Megalomania Cafe, he wrote scholarly introductions to Goethe's scientific works while surrounded by Wagnerians, astrologers, poets, and vegetarians. The bohemian fringe exploring what mainstream academia dismissed. But Steiner couldn't share his deepest experiences without people thinking him delusional or confusing him with spiritualists. Then he met Felix Koguski, an uneducated herb gatherer who shared Steiner's perceptions. Felix understood how plants connected to cosmic forces and human nature. Finally, someone who understood. Around this time, a mysterious figure known only as the Master appeared, offering cryptic advice. To overcome the dragon, you must slip into his skin, master materialist philosophy before attempting to transcend it. At 22, Steiner secured his breakthrough, editing Goethe's scientific writings. While academics dismissed Goethe's science as poetry, Steiner recognized something revolutionary, a way of knowing that rejected mechanistic reduction for participatory observation. For Goethe, truth emerged when mind and nature harmonized through disciplined imagination. You didn't dissect the flower, you contemplated it until its essential form revealed itself. This wasn't mysticism, but rigorous phenomenology. Steiner also encountered Nietzsche, appreciating his boldness while rejecting his conclusions. Visiting the insane Nietzsche, Steiner claimed to perceive the philosopher's soul hovering over his head, unable to manifest through his diseased brain. Whether believable or not, it reveals Steiner's conviction: consciousness transcends its physical vehicle. His philosophy of freedom argues that thinking itself is a spiritual act. When we truly grasp a concept, we're participating in reality's self-revelation, becoming co-creators in bringing the world into existence. Ironically, his mastery of materialism backfired. People mistook him for a materialist because he understood it so thoroughly. For years, Steiner struggled to find anyone interested in his spiritual insights. In 1900, a theosophist recognized esoteric knowledge in his article on a good fairy tale and invited him to lecture at the Berlin Theosophical Society. Finally, an audience. Among his listeners was Marie von Sivers, a multilingual Russian aristocrat who'd studied drama in Paris. She asked a transformative question. Wasn't it time for a spiritual movement founded on modern science? Though Steiner remained married to Anna Unick, Marie became his most important collaborator and eventually his wife. Together, they developed Eurythmy, speech formation, and Anthroposophy's organizational structure. The break came when Annie Besant declared a young Indian boy, Jiddu Krishnamurti, the reincarnated Christ. Steiner refused. Christ's incarnation was unique, not repeating. Besant excommunicated the entire German section. Steiner's response? Formed the Anthroposophical Society in 1913 with 2,500 members. On a Swiss hillside called Dornach, Steiner gathered 40 followers to lay the Goethe Nam's foundation stone, a cathedral for his spiritual science. As they placed a copper dodecahedron into the earth, thunder and lightning darkened the sky. Then World War I erupted. While Europe tore itself apart, 17 nationalities worked together at Dornach: Russians, Germans, French, Austrians, transcending the war's divisions through shared purpose. When suspicious soldiers demanded entry, Steiner gave them tours, demonstrating his woodcarving technique. His sincerity won them over. Out of this period came Steiner's most enduring contributions. A factory owner's request led to the first Waldorf school in 1919, revolutionizing education by following children's developmental stages rather than arbitrary curricula. Physicians sought his medical insights, creating anthroposophical medicine. Farmers worried about declining soil health. Steiner's response became biodynamic agriculture, now practiced worldwide. New Year's Eve 1922, the Goethe Nam burned to the ground. Steiner had seemingly foreseen it, remarking the building would not last long. As flames consumed years of work, he walked silently around the blaze. By dawn, only concrete foundations remained. Yet on New Year's Day, Steiner announced they would continue, holding their scheduled conference that evening. He immediately began designing a second Gotheanum, not a replacement, but a continuation, built of reinforced concrete with defiant austerity. Throughout 1924, already terminally ill, he delivered lectures across Europe. By September, he returned from England gaunt and exhausted. On September 28th, during the Michaelmas festival, he had to excuse himself mid-lecture, his last public address. For 6 months, confined to bed beneath his unfinished carving of Lucifer, Ahriman, and Christ, Steiner continued working, writing his autobiography by hand, composing anthroposophical leading thoughts, handling correspondence, drafting the Society's constitution. On March 30, 1925, he died, his face bearing what witnesses described as radiant peacefulness. Even bedridden, Steiner refused to stop building bridges between the material and spiritual worlds. 80 years later, Waldorf education is the world's largest independent educational movement. Biodynamic farms operate globally. Weleda products sit on pharmacy shelves. Yet Steiner's fundamental insight remains marginalized, that consciousness isn't a byproduct of matter, but reality's core, that the human I is genuinely free, that we're participants in cosmic processes, not mere observers. We can sequence genomes, but can't explain what it feels like to be conscious. We've mapped neural networks while remaining baffled by how electricity becomes experience. Perhaps we're still wearing the dragon's skin, so identified with materialism that we can't imagine alternatives. Steiner built bridges between worlds most people insist are separate: reason and revelation, science and spirituality, matter and consciousness. His practical applications flourish, while his deeper vision remains unrecognized. The question isn't whether Steiner was right about everything. It's whether we're brave enough to consider that consciousness might be more than neurons firing, that freedom might be real, and that we might actually be the solution to a cosmos that, without us, would remain incomplete.